Hello there and welcome to the No Script Show. This is our third in a series looking at various components that make up a website. Today, we're talking about the head element. As it's unseen by visitors, the head is easily overlooked, but a few mistakes can have a dramatic effect on the site overall. As with all episodes in this series, this is in two parts. First, we'll talk about head elements from a technical design and accessibility, SEO as well, perspective. Then we'll follow up with a YouTube video looking at some coded examples. And as always, there's David Walmsley, who does all the hard work. Hello, David.
Hello. Well, we call this one, Are We Right in the Head? And as we've established, I definitely wasn't right in the head, but I've been getting professional help.
Well, yeah, from a variety of different websites, I might add, not from the medics. I read the show notes, which you always, you know, very faithfully put together for us. And I have to confess, it's been a long time since I looked at something which I'm going to call so basic. And it really kind of alarmed me that this incredibly crucial and basic thing, I basically didn't know anything about. So, not great.
Yeah. So we got some show notes. Shall we bring them up then?
Indeedy, there we are. So, are we right in the head? Let's kick it off. So the first one, what is the head?
Yeah. So what I've got here, well, it's fairly simple. It's a HTML element for machine readable metadata on web documents. And this is something which I don't think I ever knew. I knew that there could only be one head on a page, and I didn't know that there were only 8 tags that are supported.
No, me neither.
And they are, well, we know these, title, link, style, meta, and script, and no script.
Knew those.
Yeah, base and template, well, I didn't really. I think I understand base. Do you?
No, that was the alarming thing. The first ones that you mentioned, so title, link, style, meta, script, no script, that was all fine and self-explanatory. However, I saw base and template and, you know, basically didn't know what either of them were for.
I think, to be honest, I don't know why I stuck on this because I don't know. And I think base is the one where you can set the URLs that are used, so you could change the whole. It has a knock-on effect. So if you're only including these certain URLs, it's a little bit like you can leave the full domain name off your
forward slash.
So you could have your base being no script show, and then you could change that to something else. I think
got it.
That's what it does there. Okay. Template, I'm not so sure on.
Okay, we'll just swiftly move on.
Yes, let's do that. And it typically follows the doc type HTML tag that we have, which is a lot simpler these days. And we were reminiscing about the times in early HTML where there were all these different versions you could have.
That's right. It was like a full 2 lines of impenetrable stuff that you had to basically copy and paste. I could never remember what was required, so I would just copy and paste it every time. But it was set, and it was XHTML, and all of these numbers and things followed on. But then I think HTML5 came along in, I don't know, I think you said about 2010, something like that, and boiled it all down to this simple declaration, doc type HTML, which made everything, all of that nonsense, go away.
Yeah, because you literally had to pick, didn't you, which team I'm going to be on, you know? Generally, the head is the first thing that goes in the HTML element itself. And I just put it here because somebody else told me this. We'll mention that person, Harry Robertson. It's a good idea to go and validate. People don't do this these days, but there is the validator at w3.org, which is good for HTML validation. We pass. I've just done it on our site.
Great. You followed all of those things. You didn't include a tag that couldn't be included or shouldn't be included, and you got your document declaration correct. Bravo! Yeah. First thing.
I do that now, and I haven't done that. We used to do that in the early years. Again, you used to have those little tags that you could put saying that this was
valid HTML.
I know, yeah. Yes. Nobody does that these days, but perhaps we should. But there is a caveat with that because a lot of what is seen as good practice is often used in a lot of inline modern CSS. And if you do that, that is going to churn out lots of errors because it doesn't recognize modern CSS in there. So you know, if it doesn't validate, it's not necessarily a problem. So, so let's talk about the essentials that we need in a head element. These 3 things that we really must have in there, and that's a meta tag, to set the document's character set to what is UTF-8, which...
Oh, David, come on. What does that mean? He says...
Well, because you can't see it on the screen there, but I'm hovering over it because I put it in here. It means Unicode Transformation Format 8-bit.
Okay, I didn't know any of that. And I still don't even get what that does. Like, I get it. You've got to include it. Why 8-bit? I mean, I'm not asking that as a question because I don't know if you know, honestly. But, anyway, it's required. But what if we made it into a 9 or a 7? What would happen?
I don't know how it works. But anyway, we know what it does.
We know we need it, yeah.
Yeah, it allows all those Unicodes that are in your fonts or available anyway to be able to use them. And I use them a lot, actually. I use like little arrows and stuff and triangles all over. And if I didn't have that, I don't think it would recognize them. So, yeah, so we've got that. And we need a meta tag, two set of viewports to initial scale of 1 for responsiveness. If we don't, we'll be on our mobile phones and it will try and show us the desktop view too wide. So we need that. And we need a title tag, a name for the document. So particularly screen readers for accessibility, so they can read that first and know where they are.
Sorry, just quickly then, those three are the basics. Like we had the list of 8 that you can use, but those three are the ones that you must have. You cannot pass go unless you've got those three included.
Yeah, I suspect you just get problems with it, won't you? You'll get problems with your characters, you'll get problems with the scaling, and you'll just annoy a lot of people who won't know where they are.
Accessibility in a title, yeah, good point, yeah.
Yeah. So really the rest of this is about the common issues. Many of these, if not most, I didn't know, and this is through other people's work. So for accessibility to meet, the basic standard I put down here, WCAG 2.2, we must have title tags that describe the topic or purpose of a page. And I've got, for those who can see it on YouTube, I've got the document up here. So we just need to make it clear and consistent what our pages are telling us on this. So typically, I think, and I used to be terrible at this. I used to keep my, I used to put keyword cram stuff because obviously into the SEO, all the stuff, and I didn't have a consistency. It wasn't, you know, now it is about, and it's no script show on our thing, and contact no script show and keep it simple. The one that was really fascinating, the first bullet point I got here, was to avoid special characters and certain types of punctuation. And it's again Sara Suwadan, an accessibility course, which should, it was a sort of passing reference to it. But it's really dangerous for screen readers to be able to put certain things in. So dashes are safe. But when it comes to the vertical line or the pipe or the line symbol, whatever you call it, a screen reader may choose, depending on which one or combination with your browsers, choose to read out pipe, line, or just pause, as it would be.
Oh, pause would be a total catastrophe, wouldn't it?
Well, no, pause is fine. Just a pause between the, you know.
Oh, I see. It's not going to end there. It's literally it's like a 1 second pause. Okay, got it.
So it'll work as a dash. So the safest thing is dash. And honestly, you've been good. You were telling me that you've generally gone dashes. Suddenly, well, I had this.
Yeah, I mean, I only went with dashes just because I went with dashes. I could easily have done pipes, but I just went with dashes forever. So that's what I've used. But pipes to me look more appropriate, unless it happens to coincide with like a lowercase L, in which case it kind of looks sometimes like you've got two or three L's next to each other. So that's kind of weird. But I didn't realize that. Obviously, you know, back in the day when I started doing titles, I didn't realize that the pipe was going to be read out by a screen reader. But there you go. Avoid at all costs. Good bit of advice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I jumped onto it only recently thinking they look quite cool. Cool people do this.
Now
I realize that it could cause some accessibility problems. But just not only that, interestingly enough, Google also, and I've linked to a document where they say this, they say avoid vertical lines, but I don't think they explain it. But there is a SEMrush experiment that they did, a case study, where they changed their pipes for dashes. And, you know, it's not entirely conclusive, but there was an improvement on the visitors they had to the site for doing that, which is...
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So not only is it not recommended for the accessibility side of things, but it also appears that Google et al., are also giving it some negative weight.
Yeah, I don't know why it would change things. I mean, it must be a visual thing. Perhaps people can read dashes. It makes more sense. I don't know. But anyway, according to their bit of research, so there's another benefit to doing that. Yes, I've gone off my points here.
You're on keep title short and consistent across pages. I suppose you covered that a little bit already.
I jumped ahead. And so I'll go on to the next one, which is keep the title near to the top of the head for quick loading, because obviously if you are on a screen reader, or even so, even if the, we'll move on to that now, the order's important. But if that comes in last, it can be very confusing. If something's blocking your title coming up, you don't quite know where you are. And it's even worse for screen reader users who need to know where they've landed. So yeah, that's a key thing. And it's not in the head, but it's worth mentioning that not setting the HTML language attribute to something is a WCAG fail as well. And interestingly, even at the present stats on this, it's roughly, well, it was amongst the top million sites, there is 15% of sites that don't have one still, which is quite incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that is interesting. Again, not something, because I'm a CMS user and kind of assume that my CMS is doing all of this correctly, all of this is fascinating. And when we finish this episode, I'm going to go and, you know, berate myself for what my CMS of choice is actually doing.
No, it's doing it. I think on the sites that I see with you, it's got it. And it's got the interesting thing about that one is, so Great Britain is the one that's been chosen for yours. So GB is, well, it says English as the language, and that's all screen readers can deal with. They're not going to pick out a particular accent for England, but you have got England with it. So
Can I go deeper? Can I select Yorkshire
Great Britain
as well?
It'll make, yeah, but it'll make no impact on those people.
It should. Any option. Okay, moving on. UX page load. And I see you've got a dash there. Well done. No piping.
Well, this is the interesting bit for me. And this is why I thought it was its own topic. So there was a great talk by Harry Roberts, who's a performance expert. He works on with all sorts of big companies. So he's done a lot of research. And there's a really good, I've linked to it, the video there. Where his talk is about getting your head straight. And he demonstrates how important structure is, what the order you put things in your head really impacts on your page load. And I'm just going to cover this quickly because we'll look at it in the next video where I've got the sort of code really that's there. But I think the key points for me is that it's the biggest, because HTML renders everything from the top of the page line by line, it makes the head the biggest render blocking element on the page.
Right.
So from the start, it's anything that doesn't need to be in the head, he says, shift out. So if you've got all these sort of trackers or even some CSS that can go in the body these days, and any JavaScript that doesn't need to be there, get rid of it, get it out the head, because that will speed things up. His other main point is avoid things like imports and redirects to other third parties. And you think where it has to call out and grab some information in there. There was a big debate, and I don't know if you ever fell on one side of this, about using Google Fonts, whether you should, you know, locally load them or whether you should be using their own CDN for this. And there's a lot of people argued that the CDN was faster than anything you would.
Yeah, like, in terms of speed, I was always swung. Well, more recently, I was swung just by the GDPR argument, not by the speed argument. So that kind of settled it for me. I didn't look at that again. It's like Google Fonts. I want to load those locally now, just because the Germans are going to come and get me if I don't. And so that was decision made. And I honestly, I'd forgotten that there was any kind of possibility that it would be loaded quicker. My expectation, though, would be that if you loaded it from a CDN, given Google's might and you know, the fact that it's got edges everywhere, I would have thought that would have been quicker. But it is another request. It's got a, you know, it's got to be requested, then it's got to satisfy that request. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, according to Harry, no, I mean, really, it all slows it down. And honestly, I did a big, for a long period, but it's using the page builder, and a lot of the people there thought it was faster with that. And also WP Rocket, which I used as a plugin, used to argue that it's better to use the CDN, and they used to sort of, pre-render that all ahead of time. But no, in all my experiments, it was the opposite. Local loading was always faster. So I think Harry's right on that one, but it's just interesting. And the other thing, this is the, I thought was the most interesting thing in his talk, was that we should put synchronous JavaScript before synchronous CSS, or really any CSS. And I didn't know this. And the perfect example is, and I would have done this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's not true any longer, but you used to get the Google Analytics code. It used to be synchronously loading in the early days, the legacy stuff.
Yeah.
And it would always tell you to put that at the top of your head. Yeah. And you would go, no, I'm not putting your
JavaScript matter.
On the top.
That's right.
I want the CSS first. You put it last. But what he's recognized out of this, and I thought this was the most revealing thing, is that it would block it because the JavaScript needs to know, it sees JavaScript, but it needs to know whether it refers to any CSS that you might have.
Which it might well do, yeah.
So if you put the CSS first, it goes, hold on, we have to read the whole, just wait there, we'll have to read the JavaScript, and then we'll come back to your CSS.
Yeah.
So it blocks the whole thing. So yeah, so synchronous JavaScript, then you before your CSS.
Well, that makes perfect sense when you say it out loud, but again, not something that I had given much thought to, because those things are sort of usually mysteriously hidden away, and you don't bother looking at what the content of that JavaScript package might be. But it does make sense. If it's going to call some CSS, why not allow it to have access to the CSS? Because it's, the JavaScript comes first. Yeah, makes sense.
And the other thing, I think that was most revealing, but it's something that doesn't really affect me. But if you have these CSP headers or content security policy headers, that restrict, where you can bring in things from, you restrict the sources that a lot of people put them quite low. And they would, according to his research, it would break that parallel preloading that you automatically get, so everything will simultaneously load at the same time if it can do.
Right.
And if you put this somewhere down the bottom, it kind of breaks all of that happening. So you need to put that right at the very, very top. But he doesn't mention it. But interestingly, I double checked it, and it's actually one of the policies. If you're using a content security policy, for security reasons, you need to put it as one of the first things in your head, not just for performance as well. So,
yeah. So four important points, most of which I would completely have forgotten about and disregarded. Therefore, but that's none of that is hard to remember, is it? That all makes sense. I mean, I'm never going to be using the CSPs anyway. In all honesty, And most of it, again, in all honesty, I'm letting WordPress, the CMS I use, handle much of this. But it all makes sense doing it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a quick little tool. I'll just bring that up over here, which is a little bookmark you can use that's been made by Harry, where I've actually got it in here.
Yeah, I saw that. I put it in as well, and I had a very quick play.
Yeah. Did you? Let's just go back to our site. What does
that mean? Yeah, you can click it there now. You might have to reload it. I don't know.
No, I think it should come in there. So it's pointing out, this isn't very revealing. It's pointing out that a blocking style sheet that we've got is the fact that I've got a link to my style sheets here. It's actually a bundled together one rather than inline. So there's an ongoing argument, isn't there, about when and where you should use inline CSS and where you should. Interesting enough, it's quite interesting. Of course, I went to his site just so we can show Harry, the person behind all of this.
He is.
And if we stick it on his, look at this. He's got a black mark here. His title is blocked by JavaScript.
Oh.
But of course, no, it's actually, I had a quick look. I thought it's, what's he doing? And he's actually got a little bit of JavaScript, which is measuring the performance of his head. He's obviously doing some testing.
Yeah, he's being very, very thorough. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, it's a great little bookmark on that. I think maybe I need to refresh just. Oh, we didn't need it.
So that's CT. What's that called again? That was further down.
You'll find it on CSS Wizardry. If you go to our site anyway, the link is there, .com, and CT will get that page up, and then you can just add it to your bookmark there.
Perfect. I'll read that into the audio. So this show is going to be on noscript.show /23, the numerals. So noscript.show /23. You'll be able to follow the links and get that one.
Anyway, I thought that gives a great, you know, as I've made the point here, there's lots of other things to talk about with speed, you know, preloading stuff, speculative loading is something that we'll look at a little bit later. And that, do you have any thoughts on the inline CSS? I've noticed that with the WordPress stuff, there's been a move to stick a lot of your CSS in the head now inline.
Yeah, and in all honesty, I've kind of just deferred that responsibility to the CMS itself. It's this whole show is so interesting to me just because of the fact that I've relegated almost every decision to the CSS. And so I will have thoughts on it going forwards. But up until this point, the answer is basically no. I haven't been doing any of that. I've just been using a theme, the author of whom I respect, hoping that they're doing all of those bits and pieces correctly. And again, with things like plugins, hoping that they're honoring this that we're talking about. But I'm sure that if I was to go in and inspect it, it probably wouldn't be the way I want it. It's always been a style. Did you say whether things should be inline or not?
Yeah.
I've always gone with a style sheet, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, most of what you have hasn't, because of the fact that the CMS is, it's not just WordPress, I say it's typical for WordPress, but also, I mean, we've used the 11T base blog for our site here. By default, I changed it. He was outputting it inline. And I've changed it to go to a link, which
go
is
to a render style sheet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is a render blocky thing. But I think the thing is, the advantage of inline is the fact that you stop that render blocking, but the disadvantage is that every new page you go to after that, you haven't got it cached any longer, so it has to reload that from your inline.
Right.
Whereas
that's true. Yeah.
So that's your, you know, if you think people are going to go to more than one page, then probably
it makes sense to go with a resource rather than inline. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, it's just, we won't get into that any further. Let's move on to the next thing. So UX design side of things. So yeah, there's an element of design that comes into our heads, even though users don't see it. We have favicons and we have our metadata for our social networks, Open Graph and Twitter images, or X images, as they maybe call it now. So there's a bit of news on that. So I thought this was really fascinating. It's really recent. It's only Safari 26.
Yeah. I didn't know this either.
Yeah. It's just in June, and I think it's fully out now. And actually, if you look, so they're supporting SVG favicons. And actually, if I just go to the link here, we'll notice, can I use these? Right. So globally, we're almost 78% now with this. And honestly, since I started this article maybe a couple of weeks ago, and it's probably gone up by 2%.
Okay.
Obviously, because of Safari.
Because of Safari 26. So it's across the board now. Safari was the holdout. Now Safari has come on board. You're basically good to go. SVG.
Yeah.
Favicon.
And the good thing about the SVG favicon is that you can have light and dark modes with it. So
right.
Something you can't do with the.
When you say you can do light and dark modes, does it not automatically? Do you have to predefine a light and a dark one, or does it render it differently if it detects that it's on dark mode, for example?
No, you'll need to put it. Use the CSS prefers.
That's it. That's it.
Color scheme and have an alternative to switch to. But it means it supports that. Quite interesting. I mean, I'm just looking at the can I use here. So it's actually a lot lower. It's nearly 62% in USA and 64% in UK. But of course, here in India, we are way ahead of you. Nice. 94. So,
I wonder why. What is it that we're doing differently?
I think it's probably there are less users of, and I think this is where the hold off would be, of mobiles that with Safari on it, less Apple products, I would guess.
Okay.
So, and nearly everybody's on the mobile. So, yeah.
Got it.
So, supported there.
Got it.
I am.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. So, we still need our ICO fallback. With that, on our site, I've really just put a very simple one. I mean, you can really spend a lot of time. You can either embed, can't you, different sizes in that format.
Yep.
So it works in different, and I haven't done that.
You've just gone for the one teeny tiny one.
Because I think this is the way forward. But I think it's really fascinating. We'll look at the code anyway a little bit for the SVG icons. But I think it's really cool that you can now create your icon, and within that SVG, you can add in your preferred color scheme and the...
Nice.
device is going to swap. And it's actually on our site here, but we'll show that, I think, in the video. The other thing, social media-wise, a great little tool that I like to use is metatags.io, which allows you to sort of check what you've got on your site. So I've done it on here, and it shows you all the sort of how your image might show on the different platforms. You can generally get away. So this is the generic one on the about page that I've used, but actually what we're doing on our site is we're borrowing the YouTube thumbnail. So when we put the YouTube video up, it's outputting on those episode pages I think that's pretty cool that you can use, if you put enough padding around it. So you need a
Get away with one, can't you, if you just make sure that it's not too...
Exactly.
I don't know. It's just not bleeding to the edges, unless it's just ordinary gradients or colors. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because Twitter's slightly different to Facebook. Or Facebook is a little bit odd because it's usually a 16:9 ratio, you know? And that's what Twitter uses, but the other doesn't anyway.
Do we still care about things like that, though? What I mean is, like, how is it that those platforms still have the sway that they have over this kind of stuff? I guess it's just because they are the way people are consuming things. But although there's like a hotbed of people who use X globally, it's a tiny platform really compared to the likes of Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. But nevertheless, I guess they just they set the agenda and they get to keep the spoils.
Yeah, and you know, if you've got the two formats for, you know, the Open Graph, I mean, it's going to be used by all the other ones. So, you know, Blue Sky and Slack and all
on,
those kinds
on
of
my SEO plugin of choice in WordPress, it just requires those two. It calls it Facebook and Twitter. And you just, you know, and it gives you a demo, much like you've just seen inside the plugin, and you can judge for yourself whether you've got the alignment wrong. But mostly, if you just have a little bit of a upper board around the edge of nothingness, then anything will work. You only need one. You don't need two.
Anyway, I mean, I put it down as a problem. I didn't explain that just because you could have them missing. And I had it missing. I forgot the social media on somebody's site and they were going, oh, it looks really awful. And of course, what it does is it takes the first thing in the DOM, which was actually a mega menu in our case. Tiny image in it. So I had to put a generic one in there. But we'll move into that more. Let's talk about the technical SEO. So just a little bit about what we might want to include in our head. Robots is probably something that we might want to have, a meta name of robots, so we can control the search engine's crawl.
Well, you try to control, no real control on that at all, but yeah.
You're onto something there. Let me just go over here. Here is ours. Sorry for those who are just listening.
But you've got loads in there. That's interesting.
Well, I've just done it, and it will be close to your heart here, but you'll see here that I'm disallowing
the Amazon bot. Oh, interesting.
All the AIs.
Do you for a minute imagine that they're going to honor that? Do you think, for example, ChatGPT bot is going to come along and go, oh, disallowed? Yeah, fine, we'll disallow it. That's fine. I don't know.
Well, I've got that, and I've also got robots written in the head as well, saying no AI as well. So these are my two things. It'll be fascinating to, well, I don't know if I'll know, but I certainly do see on a lot of my sites that it's using a lot more server resources now.
Oh, did you see that Cloudflare have kind of been taking steps about this? Because they obviously don't believe that the declaration there, you know, disallow, for example, ChatGPT or what have you, that they're obviously not taking that seriously, because they've got this new thing where they're going to basically drop traffic, and they govern about 20% of the web, so they've got fairly sharp teeth. But they're either going to tie them up in a kind of like an endless loop of content, which, you know, is not real, but is kind of, you know, it's there, but it's not actually what they want to consume, or they're just going to drop the traffic unless you pay them. So I don't know if you caught sight of any of that, but I definitely wouldn't be trusting these companies.
Yeah, I got it from your other show. I wouldn't have known about it. Yeah, it did amuse me. But yes, same as you. I'm not sure if I want another big megacorp to help me with the problems of other megacorps, you know?
That's a good way of encapsulating it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe Cloudflare is our friend now, but who knows what they'll be in sort of a decade's time. Okay, anyway, there we go. That was the robots one. Where are we next? Canonical.
Yes, Canonical. Yeah, it always confuses me, this. Oh, I've got robots twice on my list here, but that's a mistake there. Yes, it should be. So Canonical, you've got two ways of to avoid the duplicate content issue. And duplicate content issue isn't something you get penalized by with the search engines. Is it? It's just that you want to be listed for the right direction to that content, don't you? So canonical tags are a good way. Or the other way is to go with, and this is written wrong on my notes, so I'll change it, a metadata that saying this content is no index or something. So
you just
to ignore it if it is a duplicate. So they're quite key things. I've got canonical working in it, but to be honest, it's a bit of a mess. Maybe we'll look at it in the next session, because I had to put all this programming in to make sure that when we got all these separate pages that I dynamically created with the system, that I had something that was changing my data there to read that out as a different page.
Gosh.
So it can get quite complex. Probably it's a lot easier sometimes just to
say
no index, you know? And then one I didn't even know about, it's just doing this research on there, was the alternative language for X on that for internet. Again, it's another duplicate content thing. You know, you're supposed to really sort of specify which language you're primarily in, else otherwise you can get duplicate content issues with that if you've got different languages.
So, for example, if a page is once in Italian, once in English, once in Spanish, and what have you, is to declare it with this alternative language.
Yes, I think so. So you can end up with some problems there. And finally, there's just the other one that we needed to put in, which is, again, a link rel alternative, which is leading to where your feed page is, if you've got RSS feeds, which we do in this. There was something interesting. I do think from the technical SEO side of things, and I kind of did a test. I used, this was a deal I got ages back because it's quite expensive. There's a web auditor, which is...
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. And there is an alternative, a sort of partly free Screaming Frogs SEO spider, where you can crawl your pages. So I did this recently, and because I didn't put forward slashes on some of my addresses in my head, I got so many 301 redirects. But I have, sorry again to those people who are viewing this, I did actually put, there is a link there that shows our results on this, so it's quite useful to see where there are issues.
So sorry, was that a missing trailing forward slash at the end of the URL?
Yes, no script show, and often I've put that in the dynamic URLs without the trailing slash, but our setup automatically goes to the trailing slash, so when I put it in there, it's having to do this redirect every time.
Got it.
Which is obviously going to have some slight impact on the user, because it means their browser has to do more work.
I, again, haven't given that enough thought, but I will give that enough thought. But it's one of those things that when you paste the URL without the trailing slash, it looks more human readable. So let's say you paste that link into an email or something like that, where you know it's being consumed by eyeballs. Then you kind of have the intuition that it'll look better if it's not got a trailing slash, or at least I do. But obviously then the browser has to do work to say, wait, no, add it. Okay,
good to know. Yeah, well, our setup is to always have the trailing slash, which I think is pretty much the same in most WordPress if you automatically put it in. And it's probably taking care on that. But with me doing it myself.
Manually, exactly.
Yeah, I left them off and I created a whole bunch of issues here. But yeah, I think these tools are pretty good. I mean, obviously this is a premium thing, and I was lucky to get some deal earlier on, but it does a really good job picking out all the sort of silly redirects that you can get as a source of your head. There are some errors which are showing on here, but I'll just tell you that this is a bot error. So it's saying it can't find something, and it's also saying there's some broken links, but in actual fact it's the bot. It's Cloudflare protecting me from the bot crawling my email address.
Okay. I can understand why they're doing that. Yeah. Okay. Swings and roundabouts with Cloudflare today then.
yeah. So they're doing a good job there, but they are showing me errors on there. But that was, So we've kind of tidied up our head a little bit now.
Yeah. Well, I've always had a fairly messy head, to be honest. And now I'm feeling as if I've had a coiffeur. I've had a smart haircut and a buffing up. No, that's really interesting. That's great. Just for the people who are listening to this once more, if you want to follow the bits and pieces that David has put on that page, you're going to amend the few things I think probably that he said needed amending. noscript.show/23. And then in a few moments from now, David and I are going to record a visual version where David sort of goes through this in more detail on the screen. So less audio, more video. And you'll be able to find that at noscript.show/learn/14 with a trailing forward slash, I might add. But it looks better like that. So I'm leaving it like that. So there you go. You'll be able to find that as well. So there'll be some addendum to this content. Is that it? Have we done for this one?
Yeah, we're done. We're going to look at the head now as a component in a bit of code. The way it's set up actually on our site, I just thought it was quite interesting where the series might go actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. There was like, that's 101 basic stuff that we've just covered. And I knew way less than 30% of it.
Yeah, I was flashing red all the way through reading this stuff. Definitely. Putting it together going, oh my God.
Yeah, that's basic stuff. Okay, so in which case, we'll pause the recording there and we'll see you next time if you listen to the audio. If not, come and join us for the video. See you in a bit. Bye.
Bye.